Apologize for not mentioning the recent death of Jan Day. Jan was a wonderful, independent lady, and unfortunately suffered a massive stroke and heart attack this past week. She hadn't been able to attend services in some time, but she had some devoted caregivers, and she had some wonderful friends in the church, and thanks to those of you that helped take care of her and helped check in on her from time to time. After Bob died, I know that Jan was very, very, of course, very, very sad losing her husband and, you know, of many, many years. And he was a delightful person in his own right. He was never a church member, but he was always very considerate to the church members up in Oregon and down here as well. So we certainly are thankful that she's not suffering and is awaiting the first resurrection. My wife reminded me I probably shouldn't make fun of Canadians. So any of you have any Canadian ancestors, my apologies. Some of my best friends are Canadians, too. So, but I was just joking. So, perhaps the most common topic discussed in everyday conversation is the weather. It's one of the reasons we went to a little bit more casual attire this week. I remember learning in England when I was there this little ditty. Well, and maybe this was a tongue twister in Spokesman's Club, I can't remember, but whether the weather is hot or whether the weather is not, whether the weather, whatever the weather, whether we like it or not. Not really sure what that means. Attributed to a Canadian philosopher. I'm not kidding. Just kidding. Mark Twain said, "Everyone talks about the weather, but no one does anything about it." This is a quote that I found. This is from story Chasing Fireflies by Charles Martin. It's so dry the trees are bribing the dogs. In different places where I've lived, this is often quoted by the natives who've lived around that place for a long time. I haven't ever heard it in Tucson because it's not typical of Tucson, but everyone tends to think the weather in their area is unique and it's so different than everybody else's. Maybe in some cases that's true, but this is a common quotation by so many people in a lot of places that I've visited. If you don't like the weather around here, just wait for 30 minutes. It'll change. And it doesn't really, we don't say that in Tucson because we have 350 days plus of sunshine, and it rarely is moderated from that except during, you know, some brief periods of the year when we get some storms. Now, there's an old favorite that goes, we sure could use some rain around here. And we sure could use some rain around here. And hopefully around July, some of those monsoon weather patterns will reemerge and we'll have a little cooling off from this hot weather. The question is our weather today in 2015 more drastic or more turbulent or chaotic than at other times during mankind's history? Or let's go back a decade or so, or maybe 20 years. Or 30 years, or 40 years, is there something so different about the weather? And as one of our publications once said, is there something wrong with the weather? I did a literature search, which thankfully to the internet, you can do a literature search and you can find virtually everything that the Church of God has published about weather. And about weather in prophecy, about weather in the future, and what's happening with the weather. I may not have gotten all of them, and I limited my search to Worldwide Church of God Archives and to United Church of God Archives, and I found 20 articles that touched upon the weather, and at least had the weather in their title. So there may be others that talk about different types of weather in our literature, but in the United Church of God, I counted about six things that have been published either in our magazine or on the internet site regarding the weather. So I've done a pretty exhaustive search, and it goes back 62 years to the first article ever published by than the Radio Church of God about weather disturbances. So from 1953 to 1984, the Worldwide Church of God published at least 20 articles about the weather. And from 1995 until the present, United Church of God has published at least 6 articles. Now, this search did not include any other Church of God groups, which also very possibly have written other articles about the weather. Some of the titles, I won't name all of them because that would be really boring. Beginning in 1953, an article by Herman Hay, What is Wrong with the Weather? 1955, another article by Dr. Hay, Weather Changes Threaten Disaster for USA. Again, later on in the year, in 1955, Worst Weather Ever! Exclamation point. 1959, an article written by Garner Ted Armstrong, What You Don't Know About the Weather. 1962, and I would cite this article by Robert Boricker as probably one of the more helpful articles, and I'll cite it several times today or quote from it several times today, is titled Weather and Chaos, What Does It Mean? This was written in 1962. 1964, we came out with an article entitled Who Controls the Weather? And in 1984, an article written by John Schrader, who recently died several years ago from Great, he was stationed in Great Britain, Chaotic Weather, Return of the Dust Bowl, ? And then in an internet article written by Michael Kelly in 2011, is on our UCG website. It's titled Violent Weather, Where Was God? So I have a pretty good handle on what we have taught and what we have written about weather and upset weather patterns for at least 60 years. So for over 60 years of reporting on the weather, and virtually all the articles highlight, I mean, no matter what the decade, all of the articles highlight dramatic changes in weather that were occurring in the writer's thought process at that particular time. And in our present day, this argument, and this argument goes back to the 80s and perhaps even a little bit earlier than that for the origin, the topic of man-made climate change or global warming, or when people say that, they usually mean man-made global warming, has become, in our day and age, a hot, pardon the pun, political topic. So it's one of those things that people either are adamantly for and sometimes adamantly against. So I don't think the purpose of a sermon today should be to solve that raging question. Although I could, maybe I will. Who knows if the mood strikes me. I don't know if we'll be able to solve that raging question about whether there is such a thing as global warming or man-made global warming, or that man is the cause of it, not to everyone's satisfaction, certainly. But there are some who believe that man and his technologies and everything that he's been able to invent and do are responsible for changing the climate. But some of the evidence that is cited and used for that has been widely reported to have been manipulated, and so one wonders whether there's anything to the theory or not. But it reminds me very much of the doom and gloom naysayers of the 1960s and the 1970s who actually began this kind of traffic or this particular marketplace of fear because of what man has done. Paul Ehrlich is someone you've probably heard of. He's looked upon as a scientist, and he published a book in the late 1960s. And even though virtually everything that he wrote was disproven and discredited long ago, he remains adamant about his theories about the population bomb, and at some point the food line and the population line are going to cross and we'll have mass starvation and famine. So that didn't happen in the timeline, at least that he prophesied, and he is what I would call one of those secular prophets of gloom and doom. But several years ago, and this is, you know, I can't help but allow some of my personal prejudice to creep out at times. But several years ago, I was speaking with someone from another church area, and he boldly proclaimed his conviction regarding global warming and asked my opinion on the matter. And I said, seriously? So, can man influence the weather? Believe it or not, it's a topic that goes back over 60 years ago. But science doesn't seem to support that notion, and it's not the only time that people have bought into this idea, but the idea that man can do something about the weather probably came about in the 1960s, but I doubt that it was. It certainly wasn't the first time that it was mentioned. About 25 years ago, I had the pleasure of visiting what is called the Tree Lab at the University of Arizona. And I don't know. I don't know if it's open to the public, but I got an audience. Dr. Hay wanted to go to this particular place, and it's inside the football stadium on the east side. There's in the bowels of the football stadium in a dank office, dark and dreary, no sunlight, no windows, no nothing. There's actually a place, this long corridor, longer than this building, where they have stumps of trees and slices of trees, and some of them come from what are thought to be the oldest living things on the face of the earth, the bristlecone pines. They have slices of these, and you know, every concentric circle is thought to be a year of that tree's life. And while we were there, the scientists showed us that, you know, it looked like at this point, like 500 years ago, there was a period of drought, or in the point to another part of the tree rings, and apparently there was warmer weather, cooler weather. The thing that really struck me, though, was how similar the pattern was year in, year out, decade in, decade out, which indicated to me, although I didn't want to really question it at that time, but I thought to myself as we were looking at this, how consistent those weather patterns going back thousands of years have really been. So they were able to pinpoint areas that I thought that was interesting, where there was maybe a drought or maybe heavier rain, but there was a symmetry year after year that was unmistakable. In the 1953 article, I'd like to quote by Dr. Hay, "What's Wrong with the Weather?" He writes, "Flash, like they used to say news flash years ago." So this goes back 62 years. "Tornado hits east. Deaths climb to 202. Flash, 10,000 set to flee Four River rampage. Flash, drought strikes Rio Grande region. Plague of caterpillars devour fruit trees in West Virginia and Ohio." These are the recent newspaper headlines warning this nation that there is something radically wrong with the weather. Floods in Montana, Iowa, Louisiana, while droughts sweep over many parched regions of the Southwest. The Rio Grande River is almost dry. We pass by the Rio Grande River every time we go to El Paso, and in New Mexico. We go across it as you're coming into Las Cruces, and it is indeed dry. But it's dry most of the time because they dam it up in a lake far north, and then they release the water as farmers need it. But obviously, it is somewhat drier, and because of population growth, the Rio Grande River isn't what it was probably 60 or 80 years ago. And there are rivers that flow into Tucson from Mexico that back in the 1950s, some of the natives, when I first got here, some people who lived here in the 1940s and 1950s told me that that river that runs down through downtown, what's the name of it? Santa Cruz River, thank you, from northern Mexico to into southern Arizona, the Santa Cruz River flowed year-round at one time, but probably hasn't changed because of climate patterns changing, probably changed because of population growth more than anything else. People are afraid. This is what I found was fascinating, that people even back in the 50s thought that man was responsible for changing the climate. "People are afraid of what is happening. Congressmen are demanding investigations to determine if the atomic bomb tests conducted in Nevada are responsible for the ominous changes in the weather. Just stop testing the bombs and all will be fine," they dream. "But are atom bomb tests the real cause of the terrifying storms and droughts? Is there a far more important cause that we have been overlooking? The basic reason why most people don't understand what is occurring is that they haven't known the power that controls the weather. It's a very interesting article all in all, but we began writing about that back then. So there was the belief that atomic testing, I don't know how widespread it was because I was just barely a year old at that time, but people actually thought that atomic testing, which didn't last very long after that period of time in the 1950s, didn't continue in Nevada. They stopped all the atomic testing at that at some point in the 1950s. But there was the belief that it was changing weather patterns or causing floods. So to be consistent, what was it causing, droughts or floods? It can't cause them both, I don't think, but droughts and floods have continued long after the atomic testing was stopped. But the question that came up, and I think the basis of it, that the question that came up in the messenger chat several months ago was, does God control the weather? And if you'll turn to Amos chapter 4, Amos chapter 4 and verse 7, we get at least a partial answer. Miss those little tabs on one of my Bibles that I lost at a Bible study that helped me to find these books a little bit faster. But Amos chapter 4 and verse 7, in a prophecy to modern day Israel, it says, "And ancient Israel, I also withheld rain from you when there were still 3 months to the harvest. I made it rain on one city, and I withheld rain from another city. One part was rained upon, and where it did not rain, the part withered." It's Amos 4. Did I say Amos 4, 7? I did say that, didn't I? Okay. "So two or three cities wandered to another city to drink water, but they were not satisfied. Yet you have not returned to me, says the Lord." In this prophecy to Israel, God says that he does intervene in the weather. And one of the ways that he can do that is through withholding of rain, or making it rain in some parts and not rain in others. And that's real climate change. That's not man-made climate change, but it's certainly something that shows that God is in control of the weather and can be in control of weather patterns. Turn to the book of Psalm in chapter 104. And actually, this psalm has a lot to say about the weather. Much of the psalm has to do with the weather or the effects of weather, and it shows the beneficial effects of weather and the beautiful effects, the things that God can do for mankind. Verse 1, "Bless the Lord, O my soul. O Lord my God, you are very great. You are clothed with honor and majesty. Who cover yourself with light as with a garment, who stretches out the heavens like a curtain. He lays the beam of his upper chambers in the waters, and he makes the clouds his chariot, who walks on the wings of the wind, who makes his angel spirits his ministers a flame of fire. You who laid the foundations of the earth so that it should not be moved forever, you covered it with the deep as with a garment," the oceans obviously. "The waters stood above the mountains. At your rebuke, they fled. At the voice of your thunder, they hastened away. They went up over the mountains. They went down into the valley to the place which you founded for them. You have set a boundary that they may not pass over, that they may not cover the earth." The oceans and the land, much of the earth is ocean, is water, 70% for a very good purpose, and the other 30% land. "He sends the springs into the valleys. They flow among the hills. They give drink to every beast of the field. The wild donkeys quench their thirst. By them the birds of the heavens have their home. They sing among the branches. He waters the hills from his upper chambers. The earth is satisfied with the fruit of your works. He causes the grass to grow for the cattle and the vegetation for the service of man, that he may bring food from the earth and wine that makes the heart of man. That makes glad the heart of man, oil to make his face shine, and bread which strengthens man's heart. The trees of the Lord are full of sap, the cedars of Lebanon which he planted. Where the birds make their nest, the stork has her home in the fir trees. The high hills are for the wild goats. The clefts are a refuge for the rock badgers. He appointed the moon for seasons. The sun knows it's going down. You make darkness, and it is night, in which all the beasts of the forest creep about. The young lions roar after their prey. In all of this, and the rest of the chapter, where it's speaking about God's creation, it's obvious that they're the effects of weather, the beneficial effects of weather. And there are many, many beneficial effects of weather. But we still do have some of the turbulent weather that, for whatever reason, we tend to think that in our lifetime has been worse than in others. But it is apparent that God is the one that has set the seasons in motion, that the Bible certainly proclaims that and shows that, and has set all of the weather patterns in force that we experience today. In the early 1970s, while I was a college student in England, the nation at that time was going through what was called a 100-year drought. And when it is dry in England, that is news, because it's not often dry. I've spent two long winters in England where it never really got very cold, but it got down below 40 degrees for much of the winter time, and it just stayed there, and it rained nearly all the time. And so even in the summertime, when it doesn't rain in England, that is big news. And it didn't rain for a long time. And the church members and the college students were asked to pray for a break in the abnormally dry weather. And on Saturday night, after that announcement was made, there was a storm system that appeared out of nowhere, came up from Spain and hovered over the British Isles, and it rained for several days. And we looked upon that as an answer to prayer, because it hadn't rained in a long time. And they announced it because it was posing a danger to the – we had a farm on the college at that time, like we did in Big Sandy, and it certainly was very beneficial and very, very helpful. Turn to the book of Ezekiel in chapter 5. Ezekiel chapter 5, and beginning in verse 12. In the future, it shows that God will intervene dramatically in the weather at that appointed time. It says, "One-third of you shall die with pestilence and be consumed with famine in your midst, and one-third shall fall by the sword all around you, and I will scatter another third to all the winds, and I'll draw out a sword after them." After looking at 60 years of church writing on the weather, and you might say the topic, general topic of the weather and prophecy, one of the things that I came to, and I may be incorrect, but one of the rationale that I came to after studying this is that these articles were very helpful in helping members of the church to understand who and what God is and what he does and what he allows. And drastic weather is something that has happened throughout all of our lifetimes. And in this article, written in January of 1955 by Dr. Hay, "Weather Changes Threaten Disaster for the USA." The subtitle is, Weather Bureau Experts Are Frankly Frightened About America's Future. They know that within 20 years, this nation will be toppled from its dizzying economic heights by the worst drought in history. Here are the facts and what prophecy says will happen. These articles, coupled with other articles about the need to change and the need for the individual to change, were probably very helpful for maybe even some of you back in the early days to recognize that God is actually the one that is in control of the weather. And even though you have 60 years of history that shows that dramatic, chaotic weather wasn't just the province of the 1950s and really hasn't occurred in greater frequency since that time, it was probably very helpful in convincing people about the need for themselves to change and to repent and understand who God was. So in that way, those things were very, very helpful for the individuals who would become members of the Church of God. In October of 1955, Dr. Hay wrote, "The worst weather ever." And probably we could say that about a lot of times in our lives. We have a lot of hot summers, because of the climate in which we live, and we expect it. One of the hottest summers that I remember in Tucson, it may not have been the hottest on record, but it was, I remember it for whatever reason, 1994, I think we had more consecutive days of 100-degree weather in southern Arizona than we have ever had. But that may not be correct. That just is my memory. So it may be that sometimes our memories can play tricks on us and we think that things are much worse or that storms are much worse than they ever have been before. In Jeremiah chapter 30 and verse 7, this is the verse that I would go to. This would be my fallback verse to go to show there will be a time in which the weather will definitely get worse. Not just the worst weather in recent history, but it will happen. And we'll go to other scriptures that show that those are the prophecies that God gave for ancient Israel that portray to modern day Israel as well. Jeremiah 30 and verse 7 says, "Alas, for that day is great, so that none is like it, and it is the time of Jacob's trouble." The time of the end will be the time of the descendants of Jacob's trouble. Jacob wasn't around when Jeremiah wrote. Obviously, had been lived and died for many, many hundreds of years. But he shall be saved out of it. One of the ways that God can influence mankind is through the weather. So, any objective look at weather patterns would reveal that we have had abnormalities in weather for our entire lifetimes. We've had floods. We've had hurricanes. We've had lightning, storms for a long, long time. You can't really say that all of those things, though, have been the result of God's punishment on a sinful nation. Some of our earlier articles pointed the reader in that direction. Actually, there are probably fewer deaths as a result of severe weather these days than there were maybe a century ago. When there would be a really bad hurricane, it would creep up on people on the East Coast without them having much advance notice at all. And there have been devastating hurricanes that hit Galveston that killed hundreds of people many, many years ago, back in the 50s or back in the early part of the 20th century. Port Lavaca, Texas was decimated. Virtually everybody in that town was killed. It's just north of Corpus Christi, Texas, by that violent hurricane. And we do have people that die as a result of abnormal weather patterns today. But on the whole, because we have better reporting systems, we have fewer fatalities by and by. There are fewer people that are killed by lightning in present times than there were back in 1940s because people take better precautions and there's better reporting of storms. And although weathermen, we like to make fun of them and they get it wrong a lot and they're only right about 50% of the time, the warnings are usually pretty good. So we've had abnormalities in weather patterns for many, many, many years and many decades, but they're not always necessarily the result of God controlling them or God's intervention. But very obviously, God has created all things, including the weather and climate. I was interested about this topic not only because of Sheila's question recently, but I asked a coworker recently because with the flooding that occurred in Texas that was responsible for the death of one of our fellow employees and friends, I asked, you know, what do you think? I was trying to get a perspective that was not church in nature, but outside of our church. Obviously, we've written a lot about the effects of weather from a biblical or spiritual standpoint, but her answer to me was one that I didn't expect, and I thought it was interesting. I asked my associate, do you think people associate these freakish things like a flood or a storm of the nature that hit Wimberley, Texas, that caused a 45-foot rise in the rivers of the Blanco River, do you associate this with God? And she said, I don't know what a lot of other people think, but when a natural disaster strikes, I don't associate it with God at all. And I thought that that was an interesting perspective. We can isolate, though, world-changing events with dramatic changes in the weather and some of the good that has come as a result of dramatic changes in the weather. One of the most helpful articles that I think we have ever published about the weather was written by Robert Boricker, who was a minister in England, and he was there when I was in college, and I think he was in a letter-writing answering department, and he was very quiet, very meek, just a very mild-mannered man, but he wrote a very good article about, it's entitled, Weather and Chaos, What Does It Mean? And then within the article, so this was written in 1962, so this was again a topic just like in 1965 and 1968 and 1975 and 1980 and 1985, where people could point to abnormalities in the weather and wonder what was going on, or is there something supernatural happening to our weather patterns? But he points out, and I thought very nicely in this article, that dramatic and life-changing, history-changing weather events have helped God fulfill his purpose for the descendants of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. This is not necessarily a sermon on prophecy or covering those topics or who the descendants of Israel are, really are, but we've done that at other times. But he points out that dramatic events in the weather have helped the peoples of England and Australia and the United States. He mentions that in 1588, of course, we know who the great world power was at the time. It was the Spanish. The Spanish were off conquering great parts of the world in South and Central America, along with the Portuguese, for 100 years up until that point. And King Philip II had his heart set on invading England and conquering England as well. And the Spanish Armada was a fleet of ships that was well known, 149 vessels set to invade, and they were anchored off the English coast. They had a brief battle one day. The British fought very valiantly, as Mr. Boricker points out, but it was a massive gale force wind that literally blew the Spanish Armada off its course and all the way back to Spain. And they never tried to invade England again. It would have changed the course of history had they been successful. And later on, several times in 1759, first of all, the French were poised to invade England, and another gale force wind forced the French to give up a planned invasion of England. It just wasn't in the cards. And during the time of Napoleon, some 50 or so years later, several times he tried to conquer England. Admiral Nelson defeated him at Trafalgar Square, and the British have erected a statue to him so that he could look to the ocean from London. I guess it's he's erected on this tall statue in Trafalgar Square because it was the Battle of Trafalgar. I've seen it. It's quite a majestic sight, the roundabout, as the British have. 10 years after that defeat, Napoleon tried once again to defeat the British armies and was beaten at Waterloo. And historians credit a nighttime fall to the final battle for changing the strategy that Napoleon had, and they were beaten. In World War I, Mr. Boricker writes, during the 1914-18 war, the Germans planned to extend their air offensive by using Zeppelins, which were to drift silently with the wind across the target. They were coming to England. The first raid of this kind was made in 1917. Here is the account of that raid given in a London newspaper. Towards moonset on the evening of October 19, 1917, a fleet of 11 Zeppelins left Germany in what were thought to be ideal conditions for an attack on London. Light westerly breezes, clear skies, and a low-lying mist. Guided by the then novel method of radio direction finding, 9 of the aircraft reached the metropolis, one passing over the West End and dropping a bomb in Piccadilly Circus. Meantime, an unforeseen cyclonic disturbance was forming off our southwest coast. While the ground mist darkened into fog, obliterating landmarks, the upper wind veered northward and rapidly freshened from 20 to 50 miles an hour at the invader's height of 15 to 20,000 feet. The Zeppelin's directional radio apparatus failed, owing, it was believed, to the sudden intense cold, and as a result, the raiders completely lost their bearings. All unawares, they were driven southward far off their homeward course. That was written in the Observer, October 17, 1937. Lieutenant Colonel Sir Alfred Rawlinson, that really sounds like a British name, doesn't it, who is actively connected with the defense of London, declared, "On that night, London was once more defended by powers which were beyond the control of defense. Our faithful and invaluable ally, the wind, continued to freshen with the most persistence and truly gratifying regularity." The weather brought about another victory for the Allies in 1918. On August 10th, the leading article in the Times reported, "The new offensive initiated under the command of Sir Douglas Haig is one of the greatest and most gratifying surprises of the war." Even the weather favored the Allies, for the assault was launched under cover of a thick mist. No offensive in which the British Army has participated has ever made so much progress on the opening day. Reports received from German sources confirm the significance of this remarkable and surprising change of events in the complaint that the Allies were favored by thick fog. Then he cites a series of other miraculous interventions, things that we don't call miraculous, but the generals, the prime ministers, and the people themselves declared as miraculous interventions in the weather that preserved the Allies not only in World War I, but in World War II. He cites the miracle of Dunkirk, which it is called, the miracle of Dunkirk, which was a planned air invasion and attack of the British Isles. Many of the victories during World War II were due to favorable weather conditions. The weather made it possible for 335,000 men to be evacuated from Dunkirk. This evacuation would have been impossible had it not been for unusual weather conditions, a violent storm over France, and a calm sea in the English Channel. And that there was a great armada that got those 300,000 men across the British Channel, consisting of private boats and Navy boats and so on and so forth. It was, says, "The story of this strange armada which took the men from the beaches of Dunkirk is already familiar in the outline. In its complete fullness, it will probably never be known, but it is undoubted that there was such a calmness over the whole of the waters of the English Channel for that vital period of days as has rarely been experienced. Those who are accustomed to the Channel testify to the strangeness of this calm. They are deeply impressed by the phenomenon of nature by which it became possible for tiny craft to go back and forth in safety." So the two miracles made possible what seemed impossible. In the darkness of the storm and the violence of the rain, formations which were 8 to 12 miles from Dunkirk were able to move up on the foot to the coast, which, with scarcely any interruption from aircraft, for the aircraft were unable to operate in such turbulent conditions. In his memoirs, Mr. Churchill reveals that Hitler undoubtedly believed that his air superiority would be sufficient to prevent a large-scale evacuation by sea. But the Führer did not take the weather into his reckoning, for on May 30th, General Hadler, chief of the German staff, complained in his diary, "Bad weather has grounded the Luftwaffe, and now we must stand by and watch countless thousands of enemy getting away to England right under our noses." So there were other citations of weather, such as one of the most incredible was the weather of the D-Day invasion, which my own father described as being horrible. But as he explains in this particular article, the horrible D-Day weather was actually a blessing in disguise. He writes, "Of all the miracles that took place during World War II, None would probably compare with the miracle of D-Day in 1944 when Allied troops landed in France. For months, the meteorological section at Supreme Headquarters had been studying the relative advantages of May, June, and July for weather. Using statistics, they found that the chances were about 50 to 1 against weather, tide, and moon being favorable for all services, land, sea, and air. On the morning of the assault, the wind had moderated and the cloud was not only well broken, but its base was at least 4,000 feet high, ideally suited for the large-scale airborne operations. In the hour preceding the landings, when perfect conditions for pinpoint bombings were so essential, there were large areas of temporarily clear sky and throughout the critical time medium, and light bombers were unhampered. The invasion had been delayed for 24 hours because of bad weather. General Eisenhower made the final and irrevocable decision to proceed with the invasion on Tuesday, June 6th. The importance of this decision was later revealed by the general when speaking in his hometown. Eisenhower said, "This day, 8 years ago, I made the most agonizing decision of my life. I had to decide to postpone by at least 24 hours the most formidable array of fighting ships and fighting men that had ever launched across a sea against a hostile shore. The consequences of that decision at that moment could not have been foreseen by anyone. If there is nothing else in my life to prove the existence of an almighty and merciful God, the events of that next 24 hours did it. The greatest break in a terrible outlay of weather occurred the next day and allowed that great invasion to proceed with the losses far lower than those we had anticipated. What seemed to be an obstacle at the time to the Allies was actually a blessing in many ways. The weather bluffed the enemy completely. The German commanders were advised by their meteorological service that there could be no invasion in the period including June 6th because of the continuous stormy weather. That is why the D-Day forces landing during a brief break in the windiest month in Normandy for at least 20 years found so many German troops without officers, and why other enemy coastal units were having exercises the time of the landings." So that is really incredible. So if you'll do a search scientifically and outside the realm of the Bible, you'll probably find that there really isn't any evidence that weather has gotten more dangerous or more numerous, that is, chaotic weather patterns, or worse in recent times than in decades or maybe even centuries ago. And contrary to some opinion, there is real scientific reasoning for even drastic weather. That is, hurricanes happen for a purpose. Tornadoes happen because of the forces and the laws that God has set in motion. Not that he causes them, but they're all a part of what is come to be expected, weather that we either enjoy or endure. So is it God's will that people are killed in tragic weather systems? Turn to Ecclesiastes chapter 3. Ecclesiastes 3 and in chapter 9. Ecclesiastes 9 and verse 11. We've said something else, but it's actually 9. Solomon writes, "I returned and saw under the sun that the race is not to the swift, nor the battle to the strong, nor the bread to the wise, nor riches to men of understanding, nor favor to men of skill, but time and chance happen to them all." These things happen. I will hastily add that as we look forward to the future in prophecy, we won't have chaotic weather patterns. We won't have hurricanes that destroy or tornadoes that rip through vast portions of the country and tear up homes and houses and inflict damage. In Luke chapter 13, in verse 3, we can extract a principle from what Christ said at this particular time over a natural calamity and a disaster that occurred. It wasn't inflicted by the weather, but certainly you can apply the same principle. And when bad weather occurs in our time, in our day and age, until the time of Jacob's trouble, until that comes in full force, and we don't know when that actually begins and when it will happen, you can't really say that God is punishing unrepentant sinners with weather. So this was a, these were two things that happened. They weren't natural disasters, but Christ used the death of innocents to show that sometimes these things do happen. In verse 1, it says, there were present at the sea some who told him about the Galileans whose blood Pilate had mingled with their sacrifices. And Jesus answered and said to them, do you suppose that these Galileans were sinners, were worse sinners than all other Galileans because they suffered such things? I tell you, no, but unless you repent, you will all likewise perish. Or those 18 on whom the tower in Siloam fell and killed them. Do you think that they were wrong or worse sinners than all other men who dwelt in Jerusalem? I tell you, no, but unless you repent, you will all likewise perish. So he used tragedy or tragic events to show that, to get the point across to individuals. Outside of the Noachian flood, in Job chapter 1, we see one of the results of really bad weather. And although some people have ascribed sin to the children of Job, I don't even need to go there. After God gave permission to and removed a hedge around Job, and something really bad happened to his children. It says, while he was speaking, another came and said, the Chaldeans formed three bands, raided the camels and took them away, yes, and killed the servants with the edge of the sword. I alone have escaped to tell you. And while he was yet speaking, another came and said, your sons and daughters were eating and drinking wine in their oldest brother's house. And suddenly a great wind came from across the wilderness and struck the four corners of the house, and it fell on the young people, and they are dead. And I alone have escaped to tell you. So these things happened as a result of Satan's influence, which brings us to the next point in the message, that not only can innocent people be affected by violent weather, sometimes it's a result of another spiritual influence. I say sometimes. We may not be able to ascertain in every single existence, but Paul told the Corinthians in 2 Corinthians chapter 2, 2 Corinthians, pardon me, in chapter 4, beginning in verse 3, he writes, even if our gospel is veiled, it is veiled to those who are perishing, whose minds the God of this age has blinded, who do not believe, lest the light of the gospel, light of the gospel of the glory of Christ, who is the image of God, should shine on them. So there is a God of this world, as Paul described. There is a spiritual influence, and we went over that several weeks ago in the sermon Discerning the Spirits. And I used at that time Ephesians chapter 2 and verse 2. And this certainly seems to have a part in chaotic weather, no matter when it happens, decades ago or at this time as well. And chaotic weather has been around since the time of the flood. And you can see examples of that throughout biblical history and throughout history. Ephesians chapter 2 and verse 2, it says, in which you once walked according to the course of this world, according to the prince of the power of the air, the spirit which now works in the sons of disobedience. And I explained another aspect of that spiritual influence, but the god of this world, the devil, is shown to be someone that has a certain amount of power and can influence events. So when you couple this with what happened to Job and his family, it's certainly within the realm of the god of this world to wreak havoc on mankind with violent weather systems, apparently. Now let's turn to Deuteronomy chapter 28, one of the blessings and cursings chapters along with Leviticus. Deuteronomy chapter 28 and verse 23. Because certainly this shows the effects of good weather and bad weather, for disobedience. At some point, God intervenes with Israel and punishes Israel for their sin, as we see that it happened in times past in ancient history, and it's shown to happen once again through the latter prophets. Your heavens, which are over your head, shall be bronze, and the earth which is under you shall be iron. The Lord will change the rain as your land to powder and dust. From the heaven it shall come down on you until you are destroyed. All of those are the curses for disobedience to God. Slowly but surely, this country has moved away from its mooring. It's moved away from its belief in God. It maybe hasn't come to critical mass yet, hasn't come to the point of no return, but certainly we've, if you want to go back 60 years, you can find its departure growing more and more as time goes by. Turn to the book of Amos, though, in chapter 3, because this is a very important prophecy to keep in mind whenever we're talking about any kind of prophetic fulfillment and prophetic event that will occur. It says, "Surely the Lord God does nothing unless he reveals his secret to his servants, the prophets." People have to be warned first before God intervenes and before he would change the weather patterns to the extent that are done so in the book of Leviticus and Deuteronomy for lack of obedience to God. They have to be warned first, and that's only appropriate and right. And that's what Ezekiel 33 points out, that the responsibility is of the watchman. Turn to Leviticus, the sister chapter to Deuteronomy in chapter 26 and in verse 4. You know, the question is, does God control the weather? And the answer is yes. Does God control natural disasters and cause them to hurt mankind? And the answer is not really, not always, and probably not in your lifetime or my lifetime, but has he intervened in a favorable way? Yes, for the protection of his people. Leviticus 26 and verse 4, it says, "Then I will give you rain in its season. The land shall yield its produce, and the trees of the field shall yield their fruit. Your threshing shall last till the time of vintage, and the vintage shall last till the time of the sower." So you're going to have plenty, and all of that is going to be provided because of good weather. But there has to be a warning first. To the book of Deuteronomy in chapter 11. Deuteronomy chapter 11 and in verse 14, God says, "I will give you the rain for your land in its season, the early rain and the latter rain, that you may gather in your grain, your new wine, and your oil." This is a book that restates the law to Israel, and before they went into the promised land, God promised to give them favorable weather conditions. "I will send grass in your fields for your livestock, that you may be eat and be filled. Take heed to yourselves, lest your heart be deceived, and you turn aside and serve other gods and worship them." God is the one who provides that favorable climate, favorable weather. And in Jeremiah chapter 5, you could probably turn to virtually every section of the Bible, the law, the prophets, the writings, the gospel accounts, writings of Paul, and you'll find references to the weather. So we're not going to cover all of them, obviously, today. But Jeremiah 5 and verse 24 says, "They do not say in their heart, let us now fear the Lord our God, who gives rain, both the former and the latter, in its season. He reserves for us the appointed weeks of the harvest." All of that was created by God for the benefit of mankind. So, in Zechariah chapter 14, one of the pivotal books of prophecy in the minor prophets, Zechariah 14 has a lot to say about the future of weather. And we look for a time in the millennium in which there will be normal weather patterns everywhere. The desert will bloom like a rose. The area that we live in the Southwest won't be like this any longer. There won't be vast stretches of desert any longer. Behold, the day of the Lord is coming, and your spoil will be divided in your midst. This talks about time of Christ's intervention in the first part of the chapter, the time of his return, the Mount of Olives cleaving in two, as we read in verse 4. And in verse 16, at the establishment of his kingdom, it says that it shall come to pass that everyone who is left of all the nations which came against Jerusalem shall go up from year to year to worship the King, the Lord of hosts, and to keep the Feast of Tabernacles. And it shall be that whichever of the families of the earth do not come up to Jerusalem to worship the King of the Lord of hosts, on them there will be no rain. Now, there won't be chaotic weather systems. There won't be any tornadoes or hurricanes or cyclones or any of those things that we just take for granted that wreak havoc on mankind. And it, every year, somebody will say, oh, this is the worst weather I can ever imagine, or that was the worst storm that we have ever had. And it probably isn't the worst. There have probably been others that have been worse, but that's what we are limited to in our memories. So there will be no rain if there's no obedience. If the family of Egypt will not come up and enter in, they shall have no rain. They shall receive the plague with which the Lord strikes the nations who do not keep the Feast of Tabernacles. And this shall be the punishment of Egypt and the punishment of all the nations that do not come up to keep the Feast of Tabernacles. The feast will be enforced on a grand scale. But going back in history, probably from the time of Eden, if you had historical records, pre-flood, post-flood, everywhere throughout the earth where man migrated, there has been something wrong with the weather. We've had these abnormalities. We've had times of drought. We've had times of flood. These are abnormalities, if you'll pardon the pun, are going to dry up during the millennium. And then the entire earth is going to have rain in due season and normal weather patterns for the rest of the 1,000 years.